Hello all, welcome to the December 18th Hyperledger Quilt community call. This call is being recorded. Please see the Quilt Wiki meeting notes for a copy of the antitrust policy and code of conduct. And let's get started. I don't see any new participants today, so I think we all know each other from an introduction standpoint. On the agenda today, I have just kind of going through some of the GitHub issues in the Quilt project. And I also wanted to talk just briefly about some enhancements to the stream sender. But does anyone have anything they'd like to add to today's agenda? Since it's just us, we could use this time to also talk about other parts of the project. Questions.
I was going to say, this kind of feels like an extension of our team stand-up.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, only difference, I guess, is it's being recorded, and there might be asynchronous listeners here.
True.
Okay. Let me just open up the issues list here. We had some contributions from a new person. Looks like his name is Shekhar. So Shekhar, if you're listening, thanks for sending in your PR, and looks like you opened an issue or two. So I appreciate the contributions. In terms of like releases, we're still tracking under the 1.0.3 label current issues that could be worked on. So it looks like there's issue 399, which is abort a payment X seconds after the last reject that has a T code. So a little background here is in the Rust implementation, they chose a solution to exponential backoff a little bit differently than we've chosen in Java, and we should probably replicate it. And it's loosely like if you get a temporary reject code, start a timer. So actually, Ian or Neil, do you remember how Evan explained this one? Was it just start a timer after the last one, but then reset the timer if you get a fulfill?
Yeah, it's basically reset the clock as you're succeeding, so that you, if you're succeeding slowly, you'll eventually complete. But if you fail enough time, if you fail enough times within that interval, that you never reset the clock, then the whole thing fails.
Okay. Just taking a note.
Which in hindsight makes a lot of sense. Like, it's worth us adapting that.
Yeah, if you fail enough times, you won't exceed X seconds, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is some like weird case where, you know, you split something up into a ton of payments and they're all very slow to succeed. Like let's say you had the timeout set for 30 seconds. Let's say you had to send 1,000 packets and given retries, like each packet ends up taking like 29 seconds before it eventually goes through in that kind of model. It would take a very, very long time to send a payment, but it's also, you know, pretty unlikely. So, I mean, there is a case where you could set sort of like a, you know, since last failure timeout interval, and maybe you put some kind of, you know, relatively high ceiling on there, like it has to complete within, I don't know, 5 minutes or something like that, or maybe even higher. But there, that's probably the biggest side effect of it, is that it can create very long running transactions depending on how, like, the way in which things fail.
Yeah. I was thinking that if we implement this, then it would need to coordinate maybe with the overall payment timeout. Would that cover that in your mind? Like, if the overall payment timeout was 10 minutes, but then you had this sort of weird, it's 29 seconds between each fulfill and you're getting some temporary rejects, ultimately you'd hit 10 minutes and then the payment would just abort.
Yeah, that's what I had in mind, yeah.
Okay.
It seems like, yeah, there should be some upper bound.
Yeah. Cool. I just added some notes into the issue there. One moment. Ian, you worked on, there was a related issue to this, but I think we just handled the 400, or, you know, like, I guess final errors, right? Where we get one of them and then we just stop, right?
Yeah. Anything that's, an F code, sets a condition that, everything in flight, is allowed to complete, but nothing else is allowed to be queued, and you would fail with some kind of partial state achieved.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Any other thoughts on that issue? I think this makes sense. I'm just trying to think about the priority, like the urgency of it. Like, I think right now we just sort of ignore temporary error code. So, like, I guess the current functionality would just be hammering a server that was sending these T codes.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now we do have that kind of artificial throttling in place where there's that 100 millisecond sleep. It slows things down a little. It's not, you know, an immediate requeue. So we at least have that level of protection. Yeah, otherwise, for temporary failures, and the big thing that we talked about extensively a few weeks ago was how feasible is exponential backoff. To some extent, like, doing the timeout since the last failure is interesting in that it's not the same as exponential backoff, but it offers, really exponential backoff is used for recovery, right? So even though it's not as elaborate as exponential backoff, it offers you a time delay based avenue for recovery if you start to encounter temporary failures, which is useful. So I don't know if it feels like implementing this means that we could kick the back off can down the road a little bit, because this gives us something better than what we had and offers a better opportunity to succeed.
I guess along those lines, I don't know if I made an issue or not, but like, we talked about making the sleep configurable. So right now it's 100 milliseconds, but I guess this would be like the soldier on run loop is 100 millisecond sleep.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Making that configurable is also useful, especially that I would say too, the, like a pending time on the end of the last success gives us more flexibility to increase that sleep amount, because in the past we were kind of contending with the upper bound timeout, but since this affords us the ability to increase the upper bound timeout to a much higher threshold, it also means that we could in turn throttle ourselves more.
Mm-hmm. So I'm making a ticket to, like, it's called make the soldier on run loop sleep time configurable. A simple one would be like set it via an environment property, but with what you just said, would that affect the run loop sleep time, or would that be some other thing that's getting adjusted?
Isn't soldier on kind of the run loop? We're just wiring on soldier on.
Yeah. So is that what you were meaning? Like you could dynamically, so rather than saying, hey, I see this environment property and it says wait 200 milliseconds, that wait, the sleep time would be more dynamic, right?
I don't know where you're at. I'm sorry. I'm getting confused.
Just trying to clarify what you just said, your proposal.
I was just saying, I don't know that I was even proposing anything. It was just kind of an observation that so if we introduce the behavior that Evan was talking about, where you increase your timeout changes based on your last success, it means that you can have a much larger higher bound, right? Or upper bound. So you set your upper bound timeout to be higher, right? Like you set it to be like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever we end up choosing. Mm-hmm. My thought was that gives us more flexibility in terms of what people set that sleep amount to. Because if you had a timeout set to 60 seconds, well, if you increase the sleep from 100 milliseconds to 500 milliseconds, you greatly increase your chances of hitting the upper bound. Mm-hmm. Versus if you have this this ability to just keep going as long as you're succeeding and you have this very high upper bound, then it's okay if the sleep is like 500 milliseconds or a second or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, it was more of just an observation.
No, that's great. I'm just noting that in this ticket that I'm making in Quilt. So if I'm summarizing the observation, is that increasing or choosing a longer sleep time probably means we need a longer upper bound, right? Like a longer payment timeout. Is that
right?
Yeah. Fair?
Yep, I think so.
Okay, so I added a note in there, and feel free to like add more comments if that doesn't make sense, or I can change mine. Cool, so I'm gonna tag that one as 1.03 also. Not sure exactly when we'll get to it, but it seems like a pretty good idea, although not super urgent. So,
okay, sounds good. Yeah, there's a few things that are lined up for 1.03 that are like substantial changes, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. The other only other issues we talked about last time was making the stream server secret generator configurable. That's a pretty small issue. But I've tagged that good first issue. So like basically that's just like adding a new constructor. So that should be backward compatible. That's 374. I have some examples of changing the sort of structure of the custom properties. I don't know, Neil, when you get a moment, we should probably add examples of the like the custom property key values that we've been talking about. There was like a kind of like a new structure that we defined, but I don't see it like captured anywhere. So if you get a moment,
I wasn't sure if we'd actually decided to do that, but oh no, we did, I guess. You mean where we're going to have different prefixes for incoming versus outgoing? And
yeah, it seemed like what what you had proffered was a better design, because it was much clearer, like for each type. Like so for simple, like you have one or two values, and it's like just a lot easier to understand, I thought.
Yeah, no, I kind of forgot about that ticket, so I'll go back and add more description to that.
Okay, I'll just tag you here so you get an email or whatever. Cool. So that's all that's currently in currently tagged as 1.03. Is there anything? Are there any other issues that you guys see that we should talk about for this call? If not, I have one more. All right, if something comes up, please voice it. The last one I wanted to talk about, I'm not sure if we actually have a ticket for it, is just basically adding more to the stream payment response, which is like, I think I might be getting the wrong name for that. The send money result is the actual object that comes back from a stream payment. And right now we have some light metadata, which is loosely like the number of packets fulfilled, number rejected, the original amount you tried to send, the amount delivered, the actual amount sent, stuff like that, whether it was successful. So I feel like we have really good metadata at the moment. What's lacking are two things. One is like an actual collection of all the packets that were sent. So wanted to talk about that. And mostly just like, is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? There's maybe some memory constraints if we have like a packet with lots of, a payment with lots of packets. And then related to that, which is the second thing I wanted to bring up, is should the stream sender be reporting back periodically? Or should there be a way for a stream sender that has a payment in flight? So you could imagine like a 10-minute payment, for example, exaggerated example, where there's just this stream sender and it's soldiering on, and the caller or the initiator of that thing wants to get like a current state. So they don't want to wait the whole 10 minutes, but they want to see kind of how much has been delivered and that kind of thing. That might be useful in like a more of a streaming micropayments use case, where maybe you actually just do have this really long stream opened. And the reason it ties back to the first point is just like in a very long payment, you're just gonna be collecting lots and lots of packets. So like wondering if anyone has any thoughts on a good architecture there or a good design.
I mean, you could. Oh, go ahead.
I was thinking about that for the. We're thinking of doing a, gRPC based quilt as a service that would do a send money, and in that case, I was thinking you would do a send money request. It would immediately return a like payment reference ID, like some unique identifier for that send money request. And then you could do a callback to say, I want to get the result of the send money request, which if the payment's in flight would give you like a partial result of what had happened to that point. Cause I think if you're going to allow payments that span more than, like 5 seconds or something reasonable that you are going to want to be able to like check in on it, see the progress of it. But it's a nice to have. Like, I don't think it, like, for the most part, most payments aren't going to be of the nature that they're really long and that somebody's going to want the complexity of actually like watching payments and like looking at the partial progress. So it could be something that we just defer as like, it's a nice idea, and until we know more about the actual needs and behaviors that we see, maybe trying to design the complex version is premature.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, just to second that, I think for... It's not insanely complex behavior, but it is complex behavior. And I think for something like that, especially with what we're trying to stand up, I would like to see someone ask for it rather than offer it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple ways that I could think of that you could go about it through extension. Like if you were calling, send money with like some kind of callback or something like that, and the callback could just update the caller somewhere else, and you had some kind of non-blocking way to like pull data that's been updated as progress has been made. But I'd like to keep something like that more in the backs of our minds, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It does seem a little premature. I guess I think we all agree that like we don't want to do this at least now. So Neil or Ian, can you talk a little bit about, for example, in a gRPC endpoint, would we then just sort of target that RPC endpoint returning a send money result, but then also returning a collection of all the packets, or is that also premature?
Thanks. Probably premature if all people really care about is the statistics, which is what it returns now. I was still thinking you'd want to return a, the method would return a payment reference, or it would have to, either you'd have to pass in a payment ID that's like either locally unique to that account or whatever, so that there is a way if you like get disconnected, you can check back on the payment.
Mm-hmm.
Which either means you need to pass in a unique ID for the request, or you need to get one back immediately. But that's not so much a Quilt concern as this, like if you were to stand up a web service that exposes Quilt as gRPC.
Yeah.
Then that's a question of, does it immediately block on the send money request, or does it, basically capture it, send back a reference ID, and then initiate it in like a different thread, or queue it up to, like it may put it on a queue, and then somewhere somebody else picks up that thing. And
yeah,
again, it's more complicated that way, but that one I would think may be worth it to like decouple the, in the case of a failure, you can still check back and get the you know, and either, since we're not doing partial like state, it would either say like it's in progress and there's not, you know, like you don't get anything back, or once it's either completed or failed, you get back the final result that's been captured. And the final result probably wouldn't have all the packets in it. It would just have the, you know, the aggregated result.
Okay. So it sounds like for anything we're even considering for like a gRPC endpoint, we wouldn't really need to make any changes to Quilt.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Are we already sending, are we already saving down all the send money result things that you got back as a sender?
No, I mean, right now Quilt's a library, so.
Yeah, yeah.
You just do a method call, you get back a response. So, I mean, so some limitations of what we have right now is if the server dies, or the server, if the Java application that's using Quilt dies, it's like that state of that payment is it's not gone from the perspective of this, the person, the application that's using Quilt, they would have a hard time reconstructing what happened. And between all the connectors, the data would be there, but it would be difficult for the sender to like reconstruct, you know, like do the forensics to figure out exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So if we did this gRPC that fronts Quilt, you know, initially if the server goes down, that would be a problem because those payments would be lost. We would have maybe stored that we initiated it, but we wouldn't know exactly what happened. And unless we made changes to Quilt to where this gRPC server could, to Ian's, you know, suggestion, if there was some sort of like listener that you registered with the request, and the listener would periodically get updates of like packets that had been fulfilled or rejected, and that listener could then, you know, update some persistent data store with the either aggregated, you know, the updated aggregate view, or if it was actually storing packet by packet, it could do that. So, so it may not be a, like we may want to consider maybe not phase one, but at some point adding this like callback listener that can get notified as things happen, so that we can be more resilient if a server dies and we have a way to capture the partial progress and persist it.
One thought I had was that, and this would require some changes to Quilt, but one thought I had was you could kind of change the behavior of the send money result to be more event-based and have it be mutable rather than either have it be mutable or have it be an immutable type that just copies throughout the transaction. So basically make it so that right now there's like a flag that you get back after it finishes that marks whether or not it has success or failure. But in theory, one thing you could do is make it so that when you get a send money result, that you could actually get it such that the method immediately returns you a send money result, and that it has two methods on it for like on complete or on failure, and you could pass callbacks to it. But in the meantime, if you wanted to use the results as they change, you could, and you have the option. You could alternatively make it so that there's a way to do it blocking versus non-blocking and have it so that the stream sender could say, I'm only going to return you the send money result when I have hit one of those events. So I'm actually going to block on the event handler rather than you having to block on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to imagine an async call that maybe even returns a stream of send money results. And so like most of them are payment succeeded, or I guess payment finished false or something, until the very last one that indicates that it's finished.
You could do it that way, or you could have one structure that maintains an aggregate too. I don't know which one is better, really. They both have pluses and minuses.
Yeah. I think in Java, like just if it's a Java app, you could totally do either way. If you wanted to push it to gRPC, you would need some RPC call that could span the JVM boundary. So like you'd be in your client JVM, or you'd actually, maybe you're not even in Java, right? You're in an iPhone app or something because it's gRPC. You would need that object to have like a get current state that would make an RPC call to actually update itself. But you could do it. I mean, I think it's doable.
Yeah. So I don't think the current state of it is that we've painted ourselves into a corner. I think we can add that later, whatever this callback mechanism is. But probably more important to get sort of a broad thing implemented and then revisit what extra detail we need before we go build too much complexity that may not either maybe the wrong complexity or like not necessary.
Yeah.
So my vote would be we leave it as is. Going back to the should we return the packets? I guess. I don't know. I'm not sure who would use that. Like if I can't think of any use case where I have been using the stream sender and wanted to look at each packet individually.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels unnecessary, but if somebody asks for it, I don't think it's unreasonable. So again, my vote would be don't add that level of detail until we see demand for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the only real two use cases I can imagine would be developer debugging, which you could theoretically enable just via logging, like debug logging.
Yeah.
And the other would be audit. But I suppose what's interesting is like as a client, like a stream sender client, it's highly likely that you'll have a service provider. Like in this case, we're talking about whoever's operating the gRPC endpoint being the service provider. And like you probably want that service provider to take care of auditing for you, I think. So on the sender side, I agree with you, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. I can't think of a use case where the sender would actually want to be, you know, keeping a data store of all those packets because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Unless you're auditing.
Yeah, and it seems like you could create an ILP over HTTP link. Like if you're using that, you'd probably want to do the auditing there anyway.
Yeah.
So you could just have an audited ILP over HTTP link that either logs every packet or, you know, streams it to somewhere as opposed to putting that in the stream sender.
Right. I suppose the only thing you would lose there would be connecting the packets to a given stream payment, but yeah, maybe it does seem like the natural place for it. So maybe there's some other way to like correlate those two.
Yeah.
To turn a phrase, I think I'd rather be surprised than prepared. Surprised that they needed that level of detail rather than prepared to actually readily offer it to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. This feels like a thing that until someone requests it, like probably not worth doing because it may not be used.
Yep.
Cool. Are there any other topics anyone would like to discuss? If not, we can end early. Going once, going twice.
Do we want to just jump in this RFC meeting early?
Sure.
Cool.
We'll do that on a different line, though. That's related to Quilt. So if that's it, only thing left on my mind is the next Quilt meeting for anyone that might be listening in. So it's technically scheduled for, you know, 2 weeks from now, which is New Year's Day. So we're not going to do a Quilt call then. And so the next call will be Wednesday, January 15th. So I will post in the mailing list and the Interledger forum, et cetera, to if anyone's kind of listening at home. So until then, we are about a month out from the next Quilt call. So we'll talk to everyone then. Thanks all.